Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K.Y.'s Whitehead, here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, I am delighted to be here with you today to talk about the roundup of all the news that has been happening over the last couple of days. On Mondays, you know, we have our political news roundup, and we have an opportunity to sit down with the political scientist, with the reporter, to talk about what is taking place around the country, to talk about what is taking place around the city, and to open up the phone lines for you. What I've been thinking a lot about is how we are trying to figure out where we go with COVID-19. We've been thinking about what does it mean for us to live in a country that now has two directions, those that are vaccinated and those that are not. In no way am I saying you should get vaccinated. I'm just laying out to you, what does it take? What does it look like? And why do we have to figure out what we want to do? I think it's important for us to spend some time really considering how we can do this. What does it look like? What does it mean? And whether or not we want to go forward like this. What we're watching around the world is we're watching as everyone is starting to see the real impact, the repercussions of a COVID unvaccinated and vaccinated world. It's kind of hard to have both of these truths being held at the same time. It's very difficult to do that. It's very difficult to think about how we can do both of these things at the same time, because we are not doing very well with them. We are actually struggling with the real impact of COVID-19. We're struggling with trying to figure out what we can do to make it better. I am concerned, as you might be as well, about the impact of this COVID-vaccinated and unvaccinated world on children. Throughout the country, we are watching as children are going back to school without being vaccinated because they can't be vaccinated. And so what does that mean? That in places like Florida, the vaccination numbers are on the rise. And because of that, we're going to have to figure out, are we willing to sacrifice our children? That's what we're seeing. Are we willing, as a country, are we willing to actually sacrifice our children in the name of our personal right, right? Because we have the personal right to not get vaccinated. We have the personal right to stand and believe whatever we want to believe. We have the personal right not to wear a mask. The question is whether or not we are willing, whether or not we are able, whether or not we have the fortitude to stand by as COVID-19 wreaks havoc in the lives of our children. They're now seeing that children are dealing with COVID as long haulers. They're now thinking about how we're going to move forward with children who are, some of them are masked, some of them are not. And if you wear a mask but your neighbor does not, how does that impact you? If you're sitting in class and you take your mask off to ask a question, how does that impact you? If you go into a store and someone's not masked, remember, children have no protection against COVID-19. The blessing is that children who have caught COVID-19, for the most part, they have survived. Many of them are long haulers. Well, that was the Alpha variant. We're now into the Delta and the Delta Plus variant, and there is a new variant that they're watching called the Lambda variant. Last week, I talked about the Gamma variant and how they were concerned that one was acting like an escape variant. And I've heard from behavioral data scientists from California that it's not the Gamma variant that they're thinking about. It's the Lambda variant. The Lambda variant that they are concerned might impact children in a different way, where they won't be able to walk away and move forward with the impact of COVID-19 on their health and in their lives. I think we have to really talk about this, and that's what we want to do today. We're joined by a political scientist, Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, a familiar guest to the show, who joins us on Monday for our political roundtable to talk through some of the big stories in the news and to open up the phone lines for you to join us to talk about these issues as well. Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, a professor of political science at the University of Florida, and I am excited to have her on with me again. Dr. Austin, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.
And I know that last week we both celebrated our birthday, you on the beach and me in the studio. So not quite the same at all.
I had a blast.
I'm sure you did. Hopefully you had enough fun for both of us at this point. So I wanted to start by having you talk a little bit about what's going on in Florida. I know you are based in Florida at the University of Florida. Can you talk about what's happening now with children in Florida?
Well, what's happening is that COVID is just wreaking havoc on people of all ages. But now, you know, like in other states, COVID at first mostly impacted people who were elderly, people who were older. But now, I just watched the news yesterday, and I saw that the average age is 34, or it might even be 29. So that age between 29 and 34 is now being impacted. And not only are people who are unvaccinated being impacted and hospitalized, but they're having serious medical issues, and it's causing quite a strain on hospitals throughout the state. Some of hospitals in the state are already pretty much just overcrowded, running out of hospital beds. Some already have run out of hospital beds. And now even you're seeing young children even. Just recently there was someone here who died at the age of 16 of COVID. And so we now have children even being hospitalized who haven't been vaccinated mostly. But even, as you know, if you have the vaccine, you can still get COVID, but it isn't nearly as, there's not as much of a risk of you dying from it. And the belief is that you won't get as sick. You're more likely to recover. Sort of like, I guess, if you get the flu and you'll get sick, but you probably won't die from it if you have the vaccine. But without it, it's really frightening, especially considering the fact that some schools here in Florida have already reopened. Schools in my county are reopening tomorrow. A lot of kids aren't able to get the vaccine because if you're under the age of 15, you're not able to get it. And so it's a really frightening time for everyone, but especially for parents who are contemplating sending their kids back to school. And also there are not as many options, whereas before, this time last year, parents didn't want to send their kids to school. They had virtual learning options, but those have been eliminated in most counties in Florida because now we're pretty much under a mandate from our governor and also from our legislature that's letting us know that, you know, your children have to go back to school and they really want things to get back to normal. But it's a frightening time because when you look at the numbers, it just really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so a lot of people here are really, really apprehensive about what's going on.
But with your governor taking such a strong stand against masks, against the vaccine, still pushing the belief that vaccines are not the option for dealing with this, how is that impacting the country, your state's ability, to move forward?
Well, it's making it difficult for us in Florida. I think that for the governor, he's pretty much getting what he wants, which is national publicity, because I've been watching the news and I watch cable news and he's been on a lot of the cable shows and he is sort of the face of the resistance to what he calls not so much making restrictions against COVID, but the mandates. He does, he feels like I'm just letting people know that they have the freedom to not get the vaccine if they don't want to, or to not wear the mask if they don't want to. And I guess, in this country, we pride ourselves on freedoms, but you also have to use common sense. If you are the leader of a state, and if you're getting nationwide attention, and people are listening to you all over the nation and what you have to say, you have to really give people some honest advice that's going to help them with their health. And so if you're telling people not to wear masks or don't listen to people who are telling you to get the vaccine when, he himself has had the vaccine, his family has had it, but yet he's insinuating to other people that they shouldn't get it, that to me is reckless. And I would say to people, just as I said when I was on your show before, you have to use common sense for yourself. Even if politicians are telling you, no, don't wear the mask, don't get the vaccine, don't do this or that, you have to think about how you would feel if you were in the hospital with COVID and what impact that would not only have on you, but what it would have on your family. And if you are a parent, how you would feel watching your child suffering in the hospital with COVID. So, I mean, I'm of the opinion that regardless of what the legislators or the politicians say, I know that I'm using common sense and thinking for myself and for my own family.
Now, it's interesting because I think a lot about this. I have two sons, both who are going to be in college in the fall. And one is down south in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, that's my hometown.
That's your hometown. And so the numbers are out of control in Memphis, even
right.
though his university, as with all universities across the country, they have a mandate, right? So they want students to be vaccinated. But they put forward and said, well, if you choose not to get vaccinated, we're going to charge you an additional $1,500 and you'll stay in the unvaccinated dorm. Now, I don't know if that means you will then have to do everything differently. You would have to do your classes online. I have no idea how they're going to work that out, an unvaccinated dorm. My son is vaccinated, but he's in a state, in a city, where vaccines are not part of the normal conversation. I mean, people who are vaccinated in Memphis, Tennessee, you seem to be an outlier at this point because the South is going, it seems it's going in a different direction. I worry about them getting the Delta variant because we understand that vaccinated folks can get the Delta variant. You will not, what they're telling us, it seems like you won't get as sick. It seems like you're not going to end up in a hospital. It seems like you probably won't die. But that does not mean it's not going to knock you on your butt. Or you're going to be a long hauler for it. I mean, this is what we're finding from people who are dealing with COVID-19 as a vaccinated person. They're like, yeah, I'm still knocked out. I'm still exhausted. I still got to take a couple of days off. And I'm contagious at this point.
Right. Right.
So with that in mind, how do we, and it's a question I'm wrestling with as well, how do we change the messaging? Or is it too late to do that? Is it at this point the country is where it is now? As an article I saw this weekend that said, COVID's going to be with us a long time because the window to deal with this has come and gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think we all know that if it had been handled more effectively at the very beginning, first of all, people should have been informed of the threat of COVID, which we weren't really informed of the seriousness of it until around March of last year. And so I think that more proactive steps should have been taken long before then to prepare the public. And then even with the shutdowns, and here in Florida, they didn't last for very long, and that was true in most places. And even now, we know that COVID now has gotten back to, I guess I was just watching something yesterday that said that it's as bad as it was even in the winter. But I would predict that it's as bad now probably as it was in March of last year. Well, it's probably even worse now than it was then. There are more cases now. The hospitalization situation is worse all over the state now. But I would say that, that we haven't really taken the proactive steps. And, yes, COVID is going to be with us for a long time. If we had handled this more effectively, then maybe we wouldn't be in this position. Maybe things would be going back to normal as we expected them to be just a couple of months ago. But now we're in a situation where it seems like the numbers are getting worse. The hospitalizations are getting worse. And we still have a lot of really stubborn politicians who are giving people bad advice. People are not listening. A lot of people are still really suspicious of the vaccine. And believe me, I understand that. But you have to, again, ask yourself, do you really want to get sick? This is not just a simple cold or the flu. This is something that could kill you. And is that a risk that you want to take? I mean, millions of people all over the world have had this vaccine. And so far, I mean, it's been rumored that people have gotten sick and died from it. But I would say that that probably hasn't really been the case. And if so, it hasn't been on a really large scale. So COVID is with us. And, now as an individual, you have to ask yourself, how do I want to handle this as a person? Do I want to listen to people's advice or do I want to just think for myself and do what's best for me?
Oh, child, people are not listening. In Jacksonville, Florida, where you are, I mean, you're down in Florida, six people from a church in Jacksonville died from COVID-19 within 10 days. So the church opened up a vaccine clinic during the Sunday service. They're like, look, come on now. Because Senior Pastor George Davis said at least 15 other members of the church are reported to have COVID-19, and some of them have been hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way we're going to deal with it in Florida? At this point, you got to go to the faith leaders, open it up during service. People can get their shot while they're getting the word.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that's the only way we're going to get this thing done.
Right, because this even reminds me of a lot of my research that looks at the role of the Black church in helping people over the years, whether it be the Civil Rights Movement or whether it be in politics. And as I mentioned, I'm from the city of Memphis, and I remember even when people would be running for office, when we were trying to elect, like, the first Black mayor or the first Black congressperson, they would come to the church, and the church would take up a collection. So churches have always been really proactive in civil rights and politics. And I think now what you're beginning to see is churches are really becoming more proactive in this,
right?
Especially in Black communities. And they're telling people, get the vaccine. And even if possible, they're even giving the vaccine at the churches. Because a lot of people who attend these churches are healthcare workers who are overwhelmed by what they're seeing every day just at work. And I think that's what we're going to have to do, is to be more dependent on our faith leaders and listen to them and listen to what they have to say about and follow their advice. Because the politicians here in my state are really, I won't say all of them, but I would say some of the politicians, the ones who are the most powerful, the ones who are in the legislature and our governor, they're not really trying to help people. I think they're trying to help themselves and their own political careers and their own political aspirations.
Oh, yeah.
And that's pretty obvious with our governor.
Yeah.
But he's not the only one. He's just getting the most attention.
I think he's out now doing a fundraiser. I don't even think he's in the state.
Yeah,
he's out raising money to run for president.
Yeah, that's what the churches are going to have to do, not just in the Black community, but just all over. Churches and faith leaders are going to have to step up and try to give people some advice, because these are people that we admire and that we'll be more likely to listen to.
Unless your pastor is Greg Locke. So Pastor Greg Locke, who, let me let people know, he's from Nashville, y'all. Pastor Greg Locke from Nashville has a huge online following. But dude put up a sign outside the church, big, humongous sign, letting people know that this church and all the grounds, it is a mask-free environment. Kindly remove your mask or stay in your car, because we celebrate faith over fear, and we are not playing the Democrat game. So you can have pastors on one hand setting up a vaccine clinic during Sunday service, and then you have Pastor Greg Locke, who is leading people in this direction, saying, hey, Joe Biden is not president, COVID-19 is not real, and if you have faith, then you shouldn't get the vaccine. Like, when you start adding that religious element on here, then why would God does not want you to get the vaccine? Because in getting the vaccine, it means you're acting in fear and not in faith.
To me, I think that just sounds, I mean, that's his own personal opinion, but that to me sounds ridiculous. Because you also can look at it as if God created the vaccine. If God didn't want us to have this vaccine, it wouldn't be here. God has made it possible for people to get the vaccine for free. So you don't have to worry about getting the money to pay for it. God has made it so that it's accessible. You can go to you can go to drugstores. You can go to, they have special tents that have been set up. A lot of them here have closed in Florida, but they had special tents in places where you can go to get it. So, I mean, it just all depends on how you want to interpret this. But when you talk about someone like that, there's nothing you can do for people who have those beliefs, because they're set in their ways.
You can't do anything.
Trump is president, Biden didn't win, there's all these conspiracies. And that's what they choose to believe, and that's their right. And if he chooses to tell people not to wear a mask at his church, and if people choose to come there knowing of the risk that they're taking and not to wear the mask, then, you know, that's the risk that they're taking. But I think we're talking about just the public, just in general. People like me and you who work, people who are parents, who are sending their kids to, you know, college or maybe high school or maybe elementary school. We're talking about those people who are taking those risks, who have no choice in the matter but to go to work, have no choice in the matter but to send their kids to school.
Right, yeah.
What are they supposed to do? I would say to them that you need to think for yourself, and common sense should tell you that you need to be wearing the mask and doing all the things we've been doing for the past year, social distancing, get the vaccine. We need to continue to do that.
Unless you're Barack Obama, who, I'm saying, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of unlesses here, right? So listen to your pastor, unless your pastor's Greg Locke saying we're mask free. We need to follow everything. We do all this unless you're Barack Obama, who had a big, huge party this weekend. We know he set the tents up. I think he scaled back from 500 guests with 200 people workers, like 700 people, down to 200 of his closest friends and family, including her, Erykah Badu, D9, Dwayne and Gabby Wade. I mean, these are his closest friends and family. And even though nobody was supposed to say anything, right? This would be a closed event. Erykah Badu put out a video, as his sister girl did. And in the back, as she's shooting this selfie video, in the back on the dance floor is Barack Obama, maskless, with a ton of people in the, quote, audience, maskless. And he's dancing, holding the mic. He's dancing with her, who's maskless. And so people are saying, all right, you're telling us that we need to wear the mask and do the right thing and the Delta variant, but yet and still you are having this party because pretty much because you can.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, I was really disappointed at that, but, you know, he's a private citizen now. He can do what he wants. And they did scale it back, and, you know, but I was looking at the footage of that, and as much as I admire the president, but like I said, we can't trust these top politicians. And he's still, even though he's no longer a president,
he's still a public figure.
Many of us admire, he's a politician.
Yeah, I see. Now, it's interesting because, okay, so if I have a party, well, you have a party, Dr. Austin, and we invite 200 of our closest friends or family members. Whatever. Do your thing. Do you. I don't agree with it, but I'm not there. It's none of my business. But if you're a public figure, Barack Obama, if you're a public figure, Oprah, if you're a public figure, Beyonce, I'm just using names of people, right? If you're a public figure, you know, Lindsey Graham, Nancy Pelosi, if you have a party and you have had a certain type of messaging for almost 19, 20 months, your party becomes fodder for discussion because Barack Obama put himself in the center and he has always been saying, what, get the vaccine, wear the mask until my party.
Right, right. And that's not just him, but I think even Nancy Pelosi during the height of the pandemic last year was telling people not to go in public, but yet she was seen getting her hair done.
Yes. I mean, but this is something. So when I mean, we come back.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Which I think even with Nancy Pelosi, I wonder, as we go on the break, whether Nancy Pelosi going to get her hair done in a mask had a different kind of weight than Barack Obama having a big old party in the midst of the Delta variant. So why don't we talk about this and talk about the Olympics and talk about a lot more when we return for our political roundup. To today with Dr. K and Dr. K Wise Whitehead. We're in the midst of our news roundup, and we invite you to give us a call, 410-319-8888. Taking a look at the news over the last couple of days and just trying to put it into perspective, I'm joined by Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, a political science professor at the University of Florida. Dr. Austin, thank you for staying with us.
Oh, that's fine.
So we were talking about Barack Obama and how, no, but I think it's interesting that a number of celebrities did make a decision to send their regrets because of the Delta variant. So it came out that Oprah Winfrey sent her regrets because of the COVID, I mean, the Delta variant, it was stated. Ava DuVernay, I know she's really close friends with Oprah Winfrey. She also sent her regrets. So there were some celebrities who said that this is not going to work for me. Susan de Blasio on our Facebook Live page said, look, don't you be talking about my forever president, Barack Obama. I'd dance with him, but I would be masking for real. And Deborah Cherry Shields said, look, I would dance with him. Former Barack Obama should have been more careful because he is a public figure. What are you really saying, former President Barack Obama? People will follow what they see. We can do better. Mm-hmm. I understand it was his 60th birthday and he wanted to party. I do think that it was hard for me to watch that. Like, there's not many videos that came out. I think Erykah Badu's video came out. And the next day, the next morning, she immediately took it down. And mm-hmm. some of the DJs actually put out a statement saying, yeah, we took some pictures, we took some video, they took pictures of the food and all this, but they had to take it down. They're like, yeah, we were forced to take it down. The thing about Erykah Badu is that TMZ screenshot the video, and
yeah,
that's how we have it. So I just wonder, how do we have a consistent message when I say, you know what, I'm like Barack Obama. I just want to live my life. It's my birthday. I'm turning 60. I just want to live my life. Why should I have to scale stuff down when nobody else is?
Yeah. I mean, he is setting – he's no longer the president, but he is setting an example. And even though many of us love President Obama and supported him, we also have to give him constructive criticism. And that was a really reckless thing to do, especially considering the fact that Joe Biden was his vice president. And he has been someone who has been supporting Biden and telling people to, you know, listen to Joe Biden, listen to Dr. Fauci, and do all these things. And yet he goes and he has this party, and the video is leaked of all these people there without masks and dancing and not social distancing. And from what I remember, when they said that they were going to scale it back, they said that they were going to be social distancing. They'd be outside in the tent and that they would have on masks. But then you saw the video, because I also saw the Erykah Badu video, and, you know, you saw that they were doing just whatever they wanted. So the average person looking at that might say, well, why should I follow all these precautions when even former President Obama, he's not doing it, and when he had his party. But, I mean, again, you have to ask yourself, regardless of who it is, do you want to get sick? I mean, I quite frankly don't care about his party. I'm just saying that me personally, I won't be going to any parties or anything like that. I mean, I even have had some students who recently graduated, and they were planning to have like graduation dinners and graduation parties. Some of them actually did, but they made sure that they limited them to like 10 people, and you know, and some of them just canceled them all together. So,
I'm struggling with my family.
Yeah, we love to eat in restaurants, but we decided that until things get better, we're not going out to eat anymore. So, I mean, you know, I don't care what celebrities do. I know I'm doing what's best for me and my health and for my family.
Yeah, and that's, I think, where we are. So you take care of yourself, you take care of your family, and you try to stay actively involved. So what about if you are connected to R. Kelly? So R. Kelly is going on trial today. I thought he had already been on trial. I thought they had thrown away the key. I mean, really. I mean, I know that we're seeing a reversal now, right, where Bill Cosby's out living his best life. And by the way, Camille Cosby did release a statement saying, hey, I'm standing by my man. He never should have been in jail, right? But I thought R. Kelly was under the jail. But it turns out that up in Brooklyn, New York, they're doing a jury selection for R. Kelly to face criminal charges, racketeering, mm-hmm. sex trafficking, and if found guilty, he could face decades in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to figure out right now, are we starting to see a wave here, particularly because of Bill Cosby? People are very concerned if you are someone who... Will you believe the survivors who talk about what happened to them with Bill Cosby, even though he was only, you know, sent up for one person?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a fear that because Me Too has been swinging out of the media, that maybe we're going to start to see other people walk away?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we definitely live in a different age. I teach a class called Women of Color in the Law. I taught it last semester, and it's one of my favorite classes that I teach. And we talk about Me Too, and, you know, it was founded by an African-American woman, Tarana Burke.
Yep.
And even though when you see the face of Me Too, you see a lot of, you know, white women, white actresses, but it really was founded by this African-American woman in the 1980s as a way to empower young black women in the inner city. And so I think you're seeing a different time now, because I remember, and I'm sure you probably do too, Anita Hill.
Yes,
and Clarence
Thomas.
In 1991, I remember being in school and having my professor cancel class because he wanted to watch it on TV.
Right.
And we were also happy because we wanted to watch the testimony. And back then, I remember the way that she was treated. Just people were like, no, this couldn't possibly have happened. And back then, you know, before that situation, there weren't any sexual harassment policies at most companies. The things that we take for granted now that didn't exist back then. And women pretty much had to put up with all types of abuse and harassment and still do. But at least now we live in a time where women are able to speak out. And I think a lot of that is because of the influence of social media. Because now, if you, even with R. Kelly, you know, he has been doing this for decades.
Yes.
And yet he now finally has been put in prison. And I mean, and that is because of the Mute R. Kelly movement that was through social media and the fact that so many African-American women came out and said that, you know, we get tired of seeing white women speaking out. And yet when black women come forward and speak out, people look at us as if, you know, we don't get believed. We don't get the support from white women that we should get. So we're going to found our own movements, and we're going to do things and make sure that people who've abused people in our community are held accountable as well. And so I think that's what you're seeing with R. Kelly, because he abused mostly women of color.
Yes.
Bill Cosby, on the other hand, abused women of color, but he mostly, from what I saw, abused white women. But, I mean, whether we like to admit it or not, I guess there is kind of a difference between when a man abuses a white woman versus a black woman.
Right.
Because usually no woman is believed. But especially for black women, when a black woman is in any type of abusive situation, until recently, she's pretty much been on her own. And you can even argue, even now, people still, especially if it's a black woman who's like low income, a single mom. In my class, we call these women throwaway women, the women that we don't really care about. They're not middle class. They're not wealthy. And when a woman in that situation is put in a position of abuse, and especially if she's abused by a man of power, people just will not believe her. And even when she goes to some of the women's organizations, even they won't really support and believe her. So at least now I'm glad we have social media, and it's really making a difference and letting people know that when you abuse black women or women of color, or when you abuse women who are poor, that you can't think that these are women you could just throw away and you could just treat them in a kind of way, because people are going to stand up for them too.
Well, then the hope. Now I try to frame this through the lens that we're seeing black women now. I'm looking at the Olympics. I look at Simone Biles. And the fact that when Simone Biles stepped away because of the twisties, which I know everyone knows, when your brain and your body kind of are disconnected or something, it happens with gymnasts. It's not just a cute little term. It's actually a real condition where you can die because you lose sight of where the floor is and where your body is in relation to that. When Simone Biles made that decision to focus on her mental health, 9,000 articles were written about that. Like, I mean, just think about that. The focus was so sharp on her and that decision. Now, she has become larger in life now in terms of even a mental health advocate and spokesperson, similar to Naomi Osaka, who stepped away for mental health reasons, a black woman. Naomi Osaka, who lit the torch, who's both a black woman and she's Japanese. I know she has given up her American passport for her Japanese heritage, which I understand, but she's still someone we look and say, okay, you know, we look and we see ourselves. The braids, the red braids in her hair, she stood up there and lit that flame, meant something. I think about Allyson Felix, black woman, 35 years old, just won her 11th Olympic medal. And I can keep going. The first black woman who won the medal for wrestling, and the black woman who won the bronze in shot put, and the, you know, 4x400 black women who run that. You know, I'm just thinking across the board, black women have been succeeding on a scale that is hard to attain. When you think about the Olympics and the focus on how black women did from basketball all the way to the water, when I think about Simone Manuel. With that in mind, we still have this dichotomy on the other side where black women are still the throwaway women. That if they are not Simone Biles and they're flipping 1,000 feet in the air, then they're not worth our time. They're not worth our energy. They're not worth the work we have to do to save them. And that is of great concern, because those are the women and the young girls that R. Kelly targeted. Who may never see justice. Because remember, the first time he dealt with this in 2008, when he was going to trial for child pornography charges, he was acquitted in 2008.
Right. Exactly. And that tells you just how sick a man he must be. Because when he was able to basically get off in 2008, you would have thought that he would have learned from that and he wouldn't have continued to do this. But not only did he continue, but it seemed like the behavior got worse. And like you said, these were women that he targeted. It was like the women that, again, were the throwaway women that people, that society doesn't really care about, society doesn't really believe. At least if it's a middle-class woman or a white woman, people might show some compassion. But traditionally, black women have never really had that throughout our nation's history. So, again, you know, we're in a different time now because of social media, that at least now when you see women being abused, that now all you have to do is expose it on social media and a movement will start, and eventually, hopefully, justice
right.
will be served
hopefully.
This time. But at least
right.
he has been in jail for a while. Who knows if he'll remain there? But I predict that he will, because now I'm assuming he's probably out of money, because, you know, lawyers cost a lot, especially for a case that's dragged on for as long as this one has, high-profile case like this. He's probably paid millions for these high-profile attorneys, so the money that he's made over the years, it probably has gone. So I don't know what the outcome will be, but I predict this time that he's not going to be able to get off, because I think there's been so much publicity. But even if by chance he does do something like Bill Cosby and he's able to get out, even then it's never going to be the same for him, because everywhere he goes, he's going to be boycotted, and it's his life will never be the same.
Oh, this is a whole different thing.
So he definitely is going to get a punishment.
Because according to the filing status, the filing states that it's not just R. Kelly, and this is why they're going to get him. See, there's always, when you think about the feds going after you, because you're talking about racketeering charges, sex trafficking. These are now federal charges. Taking young girls across state lines without their permission has elevated this. But they've also said in the filing that they're now charging his managers, his bodyguards, his drivers, his personal assistants, and members of his entourage. They're charged with being a part of his criminal enterprise. That's very different than one guy.
Right.
They're going after them all. So now, as we think about R. Kelly up in New York, we got to talk about Cuomo. Now my problem with Governor Cuomo, and folks, you're able to join us at 410-319-8888. It's just a news roundup with a political scientist from the University of Florida. So Governor Cuomo, who I will be honest, I got sick of him during the COVID updates. When him and his brother would use valuable airtime to talk about their mother and how they were pitted against each other and what was for Sunday dinner. Like, and that's why he won an Emmy for that performance, right? It had nothing to do with the COVID update. I mean, he created this persona, this larger-than-life kind of personality. His brother was suffering with COVID in the basement. Like, the Cuomo brothers ruled COVID 101.
Right.
But here we are now, and the true story of Governor Cuomo, if you believe the allegations, and according to the sister, who's the attorney general, she believes the survivors, right?
Right.
I'm standing with her. But I have people call my show and say, no, don't talk about Governor Cuomo. He's Italian, and that's what Italians do. I'm like, so you're telling me that what the women have said, he's put his hands on them, he kissed them without their permission, he groped their breasts, he groped their body parts, he stood too close, he made inappropriate sexual comments. Well, he's Italian, so it's okay. I mean, I'm telling people, actually said that on my show, and it was very disturbing to hear. What people don't understand, that's actually the definition of what sexual harassment and sexual assault. That's what it looks like.
Exactly.
When someone is touching
and
you, feeling you without your permission.
Women won't come forward because of people believing that it's acceptable.
So now I know his number one person has resigned. Do you think Governor Cuomo, and I see that Charlotte's calling. Charlotte, I'll get to you in 1 second. Do you think Governor Cuomo is going to be able to walk away from this one unscathed?
No, he won't be, because they already have started impeachment proceedings. And you know, when the president of the United States at a press conference is asked, what do you think? Do you think he should resign? And he says yes. And the Speaker of the House also says yes, he should resign. And charges have been brought. Women are coming forward publicly. One of his accusers just came forward yesterday, and she's been on television talking about what happened to her. And there is evidence of this. And the impeachment proceedings have started. Regardless of whether he resigns or not, which is obvious he probably isn't going to, he's out. I mean, they're going to impeach him. So the question that he should ask himself is, do I want to go through that, or should I just go ahead and resign?
Yeah, just go ahead and resign. I mean, I'm saying, let's hold them all. Me Too means all of them. There's no exceptions.
Right.
There are no cultural exceptions. Well, I'm Italian, so that's how I treat people. No. No. Let's talk about, I think some of the officers involved, that's very different than going after your own family, which there's a problem when you use your platform to, in my opinion, assault the women again, because you have a bully platform and you use that to talk through your innocence, which I think is very disturbing.
Right.
Yeah. Let's get some callers in here. We have Charlotte on the phone. Charlotte's a new caller. Charlotte, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, ma'am. I really appreciate the conversation between you and the professor.
Thank you.
I wanted to go back real quick to the conversation on black women in the Olympics.
Yes.
And I wanted to point out real quick that four or five black women were disqualified from the Olympics for higher than normal naturally occurring
yes.
hormonal levels, which I thought was completely nonsense. I'm trying not to cuss. I thought that was completely nonsense, is what I'm saying. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about black trans women, which needs to be had, but these regulations are so ridiculous that even black women who are assigned female at birth were disqualified for their mm-hmm. hormonal levels. And I'm shocked by the number of people. I'm shocked by the lack of conversation about this at the national level. I feel like more people should be talking about that.
I'm so glad you brought that to the conversation. Thank you so much, Charlotte, for putting that out on the table, because there have been a couple of them. And it's not just, so people know, it's not just black women from America. Black women from Namibia have been talked about. Like this idea of black women being impacted by the rules. Now, I don't know. These are new testosterone rules, by the way. Went in effect in 2019. There's another new rule around hormonal levels that's affecting black women, and that's just disqualifying them. At least two Namibian sprinters, Christine Mboma and Beatrice Masilingi, were disqualified from longer races because they said they have high levels of testosterone, though they were able to compete in the 100 and 200-meter races. I think, with that in mind, are we going to have a conversation, Dr. Austin, about trans men and women participating in the Olympics?
Right. I think trans men and women participating in sports just in general. Here in Florida, you know, we always set the stage, set an example for everybody else. And our governor even signed legislation saying that trans athletes can't compete in high school athletics. You know, they have to compete in the gender that they were born with, not the gender that they identify with. So I think we're definitely going to have a conversation before the next Olympics about what's appropriate for trans athletes. Is it appropriate for them to, if a person is a trans woman, should that person be able to compete with women, or should they have to compete with men? Because as the caller said, it raises a lot of questions, mm-hmm. especially when you see so many black women impacted by this. Is it really fair to not allow them to compete?
Right. I think that, just to let people know, folks, I want to separate the conversation around trans men and women who are being impacted and from this hormonal level, because these are people who were born a female, but according to the Olympics rules, you have too much testosterone. Your hormone levels are too high, so we want to pull you out and disqualify you. We see black women being impacted on both ends. I think the discussion around trans men and women, trans boys and girls, I think it's going to become a bigger issue because we're going to start to have that conversation again once schools are up and running. We know that there's been a lot of discussion and debate about trans boys and girls participating in sports, but also when it comes to bathrooms in the schools and when it comes to, you know, the locker rooms. I think that that question was put aside with COVID-19, but I do think it's going to come back up.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're going to have to figure it out. With Governor Cuomo that was on the table, I think he should just resign. I think that Governor Cuomo, that it is time for him to move forward and go ahead and step down, because that is a distraction. And Me Too, even though Me Too and Black Lives Matter, a lot of our major issues were put to the side with COVID-19. And COVID-19, which looks like it's going to be with us for a long time, we still have to deal with these things. So Black Lives Matter, I want to go to that because that was something that was on the front page before Trump, right? We were all talking about Black Lives Matter. Trump got in the office. We turned our attention, really, to documenting everything, Dr. Austin, that Trump was doing, right? It was just, I mean, if Trump sneezed, it was news. And everything was a distraction, in my opinion. Meanwhile, he was distracting us with Covfefe, right, while putting through more judges than any other one-term president, and in some cases, any other two-term president. We were focused on Donald Trump. And then we started talking about COVID-19, and then here comes what happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. All the stories became a part of our conversation. One name that kept coming up is thinking about the founders of Black Lives Matter and thinking about the ways in which leadership is put forth. Sean King, who elevated to a very high status within the Black Lives Matter movement. There's mm-hmm. something that's interesting about this case because Sean King first said, it came out that he was white. That's what it came out first. He was a black, he said he was black, but he was actually white. And then Sean King came out and said, no, the name of the white man on my birth certificate, that's not my real father. My real father is a black man, so I'm actually biracial, even though I play a black man online. And what we've seen lately is the mothers of some of the unarmed children that were killed by the police have come at Sean King, saying, look, you raised all this money in my child's name without my permission. You are not personally suffering like we have. You're just making money. It came out with Sean King. Sean King just bought some, $825,000 house. And the community went crazy, Dr. Austin. Like, they were really concerned that how are you working for Black Lives Matter and the people who lost family members can't get settlements and you're buying $800,000 house, which, by the way, in just one weekend, he moved in and now he's moving out. He said that people shared his address, so he's moving. His life is in danger. He said, it's hard as a civil rights leader to keep my family safe. But he's doing a GoFundMe to help him to move. How do we reconcile these leaders of the movement who've not personally lost someone, but seem to be personally benefiting from all of the energy and all of the work around that? Like, how do we reconcile that?
Well, it's hard because if you remember, when you think about people like Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, these were people who didn't really have a lot of money. Medgar Evers, even the top pioneers, the people that we've heard of, Fannie Lou Hamer, she was a woman who lived in poverty, and when she died in poverty. And so we really saw the sacrifices that they were making. You didn't see Dr. King could have made tons of money during his lifetime. Malcolm X was on the speaking circuit only because it was hard for him to find work because right. he was being harassed by the FBI. And so these were people who didn't, well, you could see that they were just in it because they really wanted to help people. They weren't in it to try to make money. But when you hear about stories like Sean King and even one of the particular founders of Black Lives Matter.
Patrice Cullors.
and the fact that she has all these homes and they're living a lavish lifestyle, it does make people wonder if they're really sincere. Now, on one hand, there shouldn't have to be a requirement that just because you're an activist that you have to be poor. But on another hand, if you're speaking and if you're defending people who have lost their children or lost family members because of violence, people sort of, they don't expect you to buy an $800,000 house because it makes them wonder, if I'm giving a contribution to this person, is it going toward helping the families or is it going towards this person's house?
Right.
And so it's beginning to really look like it's going toward this person's house and his own personal gain, his own personal wealth. So I guess it's just, if you're an activist, people sort of expect you not so much to live in poverty, but they expect to see some humility.
Right.
And they're not seeing that from him. And it just, those rumors about his race have been around for years. It's always been rumored that he was a white man and he was, and over the last few years, we've heard of white people who've been saying they were black or saying they were Hispanic. Who actually, we found later were white, and he is one of those people. So there always was sort of a question mark about him. And now that he's got this GoFundMe account asking for even more money,
yes,
that's making people raise even more questions about him.
Now we have Lauren Cornish on the line who wants to chime into the conversation. Lauren, how are you?
even on more honored that they knew my name when she picked up when the phone was picked up. I'm so honored. So look, I'm not going to hold you too long. And Dr. K, I don't know about this comment I'm about to give you. Listen, Cuomo, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was very impressed with him during the COVID situation. I mean, he seemed to have put his whole heart into it. He was concerned about New York. He was concerned about the city. I mean, he stood up against President Trump. I mean, he really, it seemed like his heart and his care and concern was for the city of New York. To me, it did. So now when we're asking him to step down because of his mannerisms and the way that he has treated women in the past, couldn't we just suggest some classes? Couldn't we say, listen, man, let's get some type of reform. You know, your actions and what you're doing, what you've been used to doing for years, is not appropriate. Do we have to throw him out because of his actions and not look at the record and not look at the heart that he's had for the city over the years? Here's another point. Bill Cosby, I made a post about, I am so glad that a black man is out of prison. You know, I was really happy. Now, I wasn't looking at what Bill Cosby did. I wasn't looking at why he was in prison. I'm not looking at all the women who accused of him. I'm looking at the fact that there are so many black men in jail who are not supposed to be there, and all the ways that we have been mistreated over the years. If one black man gets out of, hallelujah, and thank you, God.
Okay, so thank you so much, Lauren. And you need to keep listening, Lauren, because I want to respond to what you just put down. And I know we're going to pick this up on the next side of the break. But Dr. Austin, since I know your time is limited, he just said a lot. He just said a lot. So if you could respond to either the Cuomo or the Cosby very quickly, and then I'll respond more in detail when we come back.
Oh, I would respond to the Cuomo by saying that I think I question his commitment to New York. And I think a lot of his behavior is fraudulent, because I think when a man is a harasser, he had gotten a lot of positive publicity for COVID, but I just don't think he's all that sincere. So I really think, despite whatever good he might have done, this is unacceptable for the governor of a state, and he needs to go.
Yes. And we can talk. I'll talk more about Bill Cosby when we come back. Dr. Sharon Rod Austin, thank you for joining us for our roundup, folks. When we come back from the break, the phone lines will be open. Let's continue to talk through the issues. I look forward to next Monday, Dr. Austin.
All right. Me too.
All right, folks. It's Today with Dr. K. It's the news roundup. Give me a call right after the break.